There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. It is the Red Men podcast. We caught Evo doing it. Did you just do like a hair to start the show there?
Good morning, everybody.
David Ginola Esther.
No, yeah, absolutely. Evo and Sam Walker joined me in the studio for this one. It's a very visual gag that if you listen to it in podcast form, you can always get our content in video form as well and vice versa. We are all feeling mightily relieved, of course, at the condition of Liverpool's season, alive and well, as we bring January to a close. We're going to be talking about a little bit about Manchester City. You know, funny, because only like a week a bit ago, I was like, ignore Man City, don't look at Man City, don't look at anything they do. And mainly because I was hoping that this kind of situation would arise and we would be able to talk about them once again. And we can, at least for a couple of weeks. So we're going to look at them and whether it's possible for Liverpool to reel them in. Huge, huge credit this week goes to Tom behind the scenes for his thumbnail for this week's podcast. Is a piece of... Yeah. Can we just, everyone, just have a little moment?
Well done, Tom.
That's a
big time.
A round of applause, a very faint round of applause for Tom and his Scooby-Doo style Photoshop work. Outstanding. So we're going to talk about Man City. We're going to look at Man City's February and a little bit at Liverpool's and a little bit at where City have slipped previously and see if that gives us any hope for what's to come in the coming weeks. We're going to have a little look back on Crystal Palace before then. And before then, we've got a kickoff question and it comes from Anasta_S05. You asked the question, if Anfield had to be closed due to construction, etc., which world stadium would you prefer Liverpool to call their home? Sam Walker.
So we spoke about this very briefly before, so I had a little look at a couple.
You've
of
had
stadiums.
40 seconds of research.
Literally,
time
yeah.
on this.
Yeah. I wish I got one in. There's a couple I want to look at, but for me, the biggest thing that makes Anfield so special is how close you are to the grass and how, you know, when opposition players take a throw in, they get a bit stick and there's a bit, it just creates that sort of connection between us and the players. I think we need to keep that. I hate it when you go to these epic stadiums and you're 20 feet away from the side of the pitch. Kiev, do you know what I mean? Like, you just, the day we had, but then when you got in there, there was that gap and you could feel it. When they needed us most, it was harder, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And so that comes into this. So I looked at the Azteca because they always talk about that as like the epic stadiums. Rocky Marciano, you know, Canelo's going to fight there one day. 120,000 people, they say. And but when you look, there's a bit of a gap. So I've ruled that one out. So for me, I'm probably going to go with the easy answer here. I'm guessing you can probably guess what I'm going to go with. So we've got the Kop. We've got You Never Walk Alone. You've got the big one stand.
Sunderland.
Sheffield. It'd be Dortmund because I just feel like without going looking too deep into it, maybe Galatasaray might be a great choice. But for me, I think Dortmund, because we could just take the Kop and drop it onto that stand. You know, it's close to the stadium. They used to You Never Walk Alone. I think it's a nice fit.
Okay.
At the moment, anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Evo?
Yeah, that's a good one. Dortmund is amazing. I think I went in a different direction because I thought, like, even if there's if they are not close to the pitch, I think Roma, Olympico Stadium.
Yeah.
Shout.
It's a great one because
and this is the opposite because there's tons of space between the pitch and the crowd. But
still great memories.
Yeah.
And all the videos you saw pitch side, seeing the away block.
Yeah.
And from the away block, like when the players get out in the 2018.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A great stadium. I remember watching Champions League games of Roma. Like they can really create an atmosphere regardless of that gap. and like Liverpool experienced a great game over there. And just when you look, when you have this LFC TV videos going from down there all the way up, and you see so many people.
Yeah.
It's amazing, and I think that would be great.
It is a good point. There's tons of stages, because we do associate like the running track thing with like a negative impact on
atmosphere.
And yet, the Olympics was a good example of that not being the case. Right. So while you were talking, I actually, one that came to mind while you were talking, Sam, was the Cardiff Millennium Stadium.
Yes.
Because, of course, we had a tremendous record in that ground. Make sure, of course, because it's got the cop built in as well.
Anfield Southwest. Yeah.
It's got that, like, mad wedge bit behind the goal, which we had for all of those wins, is like a pseudo cop for that. But it's not the answer I've gone for, and I want you all to bear with me on this one, because I'm going to say Goodison Park.
I knew you were going to. I don't know why. I just knew you were going to say that then.
Because, and again, I apologise for people who are immediately enraged by that as a notion, but it's dead close. Yeah. So you really went for the logistic
advantages.
Yeah, exactly. You're not changing Liverpool's layout or structure or whatever. You can fit less fans in, significantly less fans in, and it's a much worse stadium. I would do it just because I think it would be absolutely hilarious to have Goodison Park be our stadium for a bit and us win stuff there. Like, imagine bringing a trophy to Goodison Park before Everton do.
Leave a little replica in their cabinet with red ribbons.
Oh my God, yeah. Bring him a new cuckoo clock, you know what I mean? Like, great. Maybe organise it so it's the last season of Goodison Park as well, so it sees one more trophy. What a famous old ground. That's one last hurrah before it gets bulldozed.
The only thing is, mate, there'd be a lot of fans who'd struggle with demonstrated views.
Oh, God. But, like, what, you know what it would also lead to, though? The Merseyside derby, our home one. The Evertonians would have to experience that away end, which is one of the worst away. Don't get me wrong, the back of the lower Anfield Road is horrific, but that's what the entirety of the way end is like for at Goodison Park. When you're on the side, you're in the corner. I've been there. I went there once. Anyway, it was Brendan Rodgers' last game in charge, and my seat was literally behind a pillar that was as broad as me. And so you end up like, you're a bit like, and you do, you end up finding you sort of, the crowd shuffles and everyone kind of moves around, everyone ends up stood up, but like, it's horrible, 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 horrible thing. But I just would make me laugh.
It's a great
to ruin their ground.
Like, we would end this club forever if we do this.
I did think as well, as you were talking there, I kind of thought along that same lines is what we could do to Old Trafford. Because that is set up, that stadium, for like plough. It is, isn't it? It's just they're all boring.
Yeah. Well, it's huge. Imagine we'd be able to fill that out. That'd be
pretty epic, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Like,
and we wouldn't leave after 60 minutes. So.
Well, it's us. Yeah, well done, Sam. You kept that in splendidly well there. Interesting. Right, Tom Minnis here in the live chat saying, gotta be Dortmund's Signal Iduna Park. Yeah, obviously, very, very good shout. God_YNWA agrees with me, Everton, so the ground can experience winning. I think it's a great shout indeed. What else we got? There's been a couple of shouts for Dortmund in there. Yeah, if you've got any more.
It's got to be some good ones, hasn't it, worldwide? It's got to be some belter ones.
Yeah, yeah. Like, is there any just dream
Brazil
stadium?
And places like that?
Yeah,
we don't
the Maracanã or something like that.
Bernabeu.
Do you know what? On your Everton. On your Everton, when it could be a bit like the Ghostbusters, imagine all the positive energy coming in from the Liverpool fans. You never know, it might be an amazing stadium, we just don't know it because it's just full of negativity and booze.
Yeah.
So it's covered in crap. It might turn out like Wigan's ground or something. when you take away all the negativity.
Yeah. You peel, it's a bit like when you lift carpets up and you find hardwood floors underneath. It's a bit like you strip the wood back and there's like some nice clean metal and plastic under there. And like, oh, great, we can do something with this.
So much potential over there.
Good shout here from Stephen Mackey. He says Celtic Park, which is actually where I thought you were going when you were also with the I'll Never Walk Alone thing shout. As well. Rico here saying, I've got a weird thing for Fratton Park.
Okay.
Interesting. Really? Fratton Park? Mm. Nah. Weird king. That is a little bit odd. Right, okay, Sal. We are going to be talking, wrapping things up on Crystal Palace, and then we're going to dive into Manchester City. But before that, we're going to take a very short break. Streaming from tomorrow? Thursday! From Thursday, we've got a brand new feature on the murals around Anfield, that Anfield mural guide. If you want to have a look and check it out, then do so.
It's amazing. It looks so good. It's a bit overwhelming, to be honest.
The best way to honour somebody or something that you feel passionate about, to do it in a way that lasts forever.
A wonderful spread of culture across Liverpool fan base.
Well, every game that we go past, like, when we see them, we'll, like, give each other a look and then just laugh. Because, like, Robbo sits next to us and, like, we'll look and be like, where's yours then?
Yes, check out all of our amazing content over on Red Men Plus, which you can get in video and in podcast form as well. The mural guide thing, I'll be perfectly honest, is far more suited to the visual guide because it looks at really big paintings on walls. All the extra shows that we do here are done in podcast form as well. So you've got two final words when we play two games a week. We've got two instant match reactions when we play two games a week. There's a Around the League show on a Monday, Chris's Stat Show. There's the Debate Show midweek, and there's the Journo Inside Show with Neil Jones. And returning, we've got the Club Legend show coming back this week, which is, if you join Redmen Plus a Club Legend tier, you get into our Discord chat, to which I'll be referring to throughout this show. But those guys also organise their own Redmen show for Redmen Plus, which stars one of our regular contributors each week on that. So you can get yourself on that show. Anyway, let's go back to the weekend. Sam, Crystal Palace, a nervy but an essential win for Liverpool.
Yeah, and... Do you know what? I didn't realise how different both teams' preparation was for this until afterwards. I think I was listening to Steve. You're talking about it, whether it was with yourself or whoever it was watching the game afterwards, in the instant match reaction show, actually, believe it or not.
There you go.
And I didn't realise how difficult it had been for us in that we literally played Arsenal, then Palace played the next day. This is the first leg at Anfield, by the way. And then we played two games of football with a smaller squad. And they all their young, fresh boys got to chill out and relax, ready for the big game. So it absolutely clicked to me how big that was.
Yeah.
So and it was a game of three thirds, yeah, of two of which we were very fortunate to stay in the game. But, you know, it is what it is. And I think those are the kind of wins that you can say you can win ugly, and it's great for momentum and things like that, and it's not always as good as winning 5-0, but also those kind of games where you're really up against it, you're leggy, you're tired, you've got less squad depth, players come back from injury and launch back in Oxlade-Chamberlain, those kind of wins can actually do so much for us. And now we get that nice break, so fingers crossed.
Yeah, absolutely. There's just something about this January period where it was about getting out of it alive, Evo, you know, and they needed to be able to. We had no idea, you know, Liverpool's future existed in this sort of murkiness on the horizon. We couldn't go, we're definitely going to be doing this, we're definitely going to be doing that. And because the league seems so far away, it makes you feel negative around everything. And all of a sudden, Liverpool in a position, that Palace game, I think, you know, they made it very hard work in the end, and I think Sam makes some good points there, which we'll come on to. But it's how I've been really encouraged by how Liverpool have played football as well, because they haven't just gone 1-0, free kick, last minute. No, you know, it hasn't been that kind of month. We've actually largely just been a really good, just a continuation of how good Liverpool have been.
Definitely. I think, like, back in December before Christmas, around the time when we draw Tottenham, and I just thought, okay, close to Christmas, a lot of games, then the AFCON lads will leave. Like, it will be a horrendous January. But, like, we came out of it unbeaten. And, like, that is, like, we didn't lose, right?
Hmm?
Yeah, we didn't lose. So I'm really okay with the way we
played. It felt like it because of the way that everyone reacted to Chelsea and the first leg of the Arsenal game. Definitely. So psychologically, it felt like we'd had a worse time.
Maybe because of this. So, like, I like the way we played. In order to win anything, like to win the league, to do anything in this league while Man City is also playing, you have to win. You have to win games. And somehow it doesn't really, like, that is a second thing you look on. Just win. That's the most important thing. And like you said that we had these 11, 12 players playing a whole month. Yes. There was not a lot of rotation. Mm-hmm. So we only had Milner came in a lot of times, but like all the 11 lads that were the ones that played 3-4 games on a bounce and having this mental knowledge that you have to win every game mm-hmm. because you are Liverpool, you are under pressure to do it. That can be really hard under the circumstances of January.
Yep.
So I really like the display.
And I think we rotate less because of exactly what Ivo was talking about mm-hmm. there, Sam. Because because of the pressure on, you need to go to the lads who can handle the pressure. Because mm-hmm. there were, you know, we couldn't rotate much in the front three. There wasn't a ton of rotation to be done in midfield. And I think we gambled a little bit more. So like Curtis Jones over Milner is a good example mm-hmm. of this. Is that we sacrificed Milner's experience for a bit of youthful enthusiasm from Curtis Jones. But by and large, it's quite surprising Tsimikas didn't get a few more minutes. Yeah. It might be surprising that Konate didn't get slightly more minutes than he did, or Gomez, or even Nico Williams. Because clearly this was so much on a knife edge. There's so much that was out of our control in terms of rotation. So he's decided to just go, I'm going to stick with the lads who thrive on the pressure.
And it's really interesting because we talk about like being able to rotate a lot. But this year we've been forced to rotate at times, like COVID and mad injuries, eye pokes. And Thiago has had his problems this year. And Naby Keita generally does. And Milner's even had a spell out. It's just been ongoing. So we had to change those players. Mm. But actually, as a consequence of what you've both just spoken about, is that we've seen Henderson, Fabinho and Jones for the last three matches. We've conceded one goal and we've looked threatening as a unit, defensively relatively sound, bar the odd crazy moments. But consistency also breeds in momentum. So I think it's been difficult for us because the lads have had to play a lot of games of football. But when you put together 270 minutes of football together, you start to learn a lot more about each other. You gain it. Oh, well, I know what Curtis's going to be there. You can almost play passes by just glancing rather than having to search for players. And I helped us. But I completely agree. I think we were at risk of being in the wilderness in the league. In City, you're going to be 8, 9, 10, 11 points clear. And we're probably going to be 4 points ahead of Chelsea and 10 points ahead of everyone else. But actually now, By doing what we've done, we've just stayed on the coattails enough, haven't we, to make it relevant?
And I think you talked about that yesterday in the final word. It's such a very important point to analyze our opponents and the way they play against us, because that the way like fuck it, just do it. Like they treat in a game against Liverpool like a game in a cup. Mm-hmm. So like they are the one, like they are the side, like the underdogs.
Yeah,
and like
there's nothing to lose for those teams playing against Liverpool,
and that is so dangerous. Yeah. We saw like the ground in at Selhurst Park, like they were there
when they scored. It went off.
It was and to still remain there and win this game somehow, it's so important to get over this. You build a winning culture through these wins.
Yeah, no, I completely agree on that. And that was the thing that really struck me about the weekend. And I'm glad that it ends up being 3-1 and people can cry arse about penalties all day long, Sam. But in the grand scheme of things, the only way anyone will ever look back on that game in the fullness of time is that it might be seen as a pivotal turning point in Liverpool's season. Really, it'll just be seen as Liverpool went to Selhurst Park and got another win.
Yeah.
And that's because they did. You know, Liverpool actually dug in pretty well. There was a chance, and I think if Liverpool were going to get murdered in the league title race by Man City, and there was plenty of excuses there primed and ready for them. All the fatigue, all the things that come on top, the rising tide of the crowd, and the fact that, look, it's City, and City are bloody invulnerable, and blah, 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 blah. They could have just rolled over there and gone, oh, well, whatever, a draw. Look at this. The momentum's with Palace here. But I like the fact that they didn't. They actually kept, they stuck to the guns. They kept trying to kill the game off. Some might say that's a bit mad, but ultimately it bears dividends because, you know, Trent playing ridiculous passes toward the back end of the game there is the reason we end up with the penalty. And because he could have just, there's like a 10-yard ball in front of him to Minamino on and loads of space, which we could have just gone and run it into the corner flag and run some minutes down. to the point there, I think it showed a load of character from the existing players, which he knows already there. But it also, there's a couple of lads in that side for whom this is like their first real run at it, Curtis Jones being a good example, which is another massive positive.
Yeah, and what's interesting is it's picking those moments through those things, because I think when you're playing against a team, like if it's the shoes on the other foot, if Palace are defending for their lives, they don't do what Trent and Jota does. They just kick it out and sort of get themselves back in positions and then they defend again. But because we are who we are, we've got the ability to say, well, yes, we are under a little bit of possessional pressure, but look what we can do. Just by giving them that always extra thought, additional thought, well, we need to be careful because, yes, we're chasing the game, but if we can see one down here, it's game over. So just those little things and having that in your armoury, I think, is really important. What's really interesting is, though, and this is probably one of the reasons why we've kind of flapped it at Anfield once or twice this season, is that Palace, the fans were really not really involved in the game because we shut it out so early. Mm-hmm. Had a couple of chances which were our own fault first half. Then the second half, they started really brightly. The crowd went, oh, but it was like kind of up and down, nothing really going on. But then they scored and the crowd went up. And it's a little bit like this at Anfield. When our crowd goes up, the team goes up. Yeah. When it's flat, we're almost like an emotional, reactional team.
Yeah.
When their crowd goes up, same against Atletico Madrid. Once that second went in, we were solid. They didn't get near us.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. Like Chelsea, 2-0, you're thinking, we're under the pressure. No, we were solid. It's like when the crowd noise goes up, our lads go, oh, this is our cue here. We need to be on it. They had three touches in our box from 55 minutes to the end of the game after that. You'd have thought they'd have been in it, on it, running, like causing all kinds of problems. So it's weird. Maybe we are a really reactional sort of crowd. Don't know what you want to call it. Team.
Yeah, well, what's good about that is that I can think of, I'd have said for a while, the only remaining weakness in that Liverpool side was going into really hostile environments, and which is good in some regards because that's been our advantage for ages. And you know, if you need to know that even the best teams are vulnerable to that kind of stuff. I think back to going away to Red Star Belgrade. You know, we've had a couple of big games. You know, even like in the Olympico, we away. You know, we win the tie, but we lose the night. You know, and it's sometimes we do struggle in those kind of things. And I just saw it as a positive. I can see it as a positive now. It certainly didn't feel like a positive. Yeah. It felt horrendous watching that second half against Crystal Palace. But kind of to the wider point, Evo, is that it's done now. They've done it and they've managed to come out. It almost doesn't matter how they managed to do it because everything that was lacking from that Liverpool side is already in the Liverpool squad. It just needs to become available again.
And I would have never thought that I will feel the way right now, like at the end of January. And I think, like, find the beauty in the challenges.
Yeah.
I think that is like, if the January month told me and taught me one thing, is that we are really capable of having a lot of good players on the pitch. Mm-hmm. Like, we are so spoiled in Liverpool.
Oh, yes.
Like having a team that plays on such a high level and then having a normal stretch like these 0-0 against the draw against Arsenal, the one against Chelsea. Like we didn't even lose, but it felt like it. But like we overcame this, and it's having Salah and Mane, just to name these two. It's a blessing and a curse at one time at the same time, because like they are that good, they can score goals, they can contribute, but like it's somehow limits the other.
They play all the time as well.
They play all the time. They want the ball all the time. They can absolutely have it. But I've seen Robbo, Trent, Fabinho, Curtis, Jota, like five, only to name five, who were standout.
Ox,
who was really great. And yet to have six players, standout players in January, where we were not good, but like we found a way to get through it.
Yeah,
like. I think it just fits. Really like this, and it gives also confidence to these players itself.
I think it fits how Jürgen Klopp constructed the side, because there's a little danger of this, and finding this with Salah's contract situation, where we're like, give him whatever he wants, put him on 100 grand a week more than our next best player, just because we were, who gives a shit?
Whose money is it? Yeah.
Oh, exactly, exactly. And this side hasn't been constructed around megastars, so I actually think in a weird way we should have anticipated it, but it's hard too, that Jürgen Klopp being able to tell everyone, right, it's on all of you. There's no go-to guy. There's no one man who's going to save us and get us through the situation anymore. You're going to be the hero.
you're going to be the hero, you're going to be the hero, you're going to be the hero, goes around the dressing room, gets a bit tiresome by the end, but he's done it to every single one who's in training that weekend, going, you're going to be the guy, because the guy who you all think is the guy is not here, who cares, because you're the guy. We're all the guys. Let's go out there and do it. I know. I think this stands us in amazing stead for what comes in February, because, as you say, those players alone know that it's doable.
Yeah.
Without the go to guys.
And just to say, like, this, this once again, like, if we look back at the season and we're gonna have Robbo and Trent in form, really world-class playing for the last 3 months, I will look back at January and say they established themselves in this month.
Yeah.
Like, they are really good when Mane and Salah are there, but it was different. Mm-hmm. I think, like, they really... We talked about Robbo being out of form or Trent not good in defensively, all that stuff. They established themselves in this month. Like, mm-hmm. they had 7 assists in 7 games.
For me, the two players to single out from that list, because look, Trent's the best right back in the world, Robbo's the best left back in the world, Fabinho best day, all these things. Oxlade-Chamberlain, Curtis Jones for me, Sam, because what they've done there is they've actually played their way in above other lads in the squad. Mm-hmm. So Oxlade-Chamberlain is so good that Taki Minamino doesn't really fit on the right hand side, but the point is that Oxlade-Chamberlain has made himself, has forced his way into that team again, ahead of lads who we actually own, who are forwards. You know, in another situation, we might have massaged things around, and, you know, maybe Firmino goes on the right and do this. Ox has got in ahead of there. Curtis Jones, more importantly, I think, though, is ahead of Milner now. Mm. Like, James Milner, and he should be, by the way, he's 36 years old and he's been a tremendous footballer for this football club. My concern over Milner was he was, because of moving Wijnaldum on, he was going to all of us actually end up higher up the pecking order. And that, for me, was a backward step for the quality of the squad, with no disrespect meant.
We didn't know Elliot, did we, at the time and all that? Yeah.
But moreover, that Milner, like, it looked like Milner was going to become our third choice DM, which was Genie's job. And Genie was a younger man and a better fit for that. Your squad's not improving there. Your utility players are just being required more, and that's an overall weakening. Milner should have played, should have started every game here, because he should be your tried and tested, your go-to guy. But instead, we've turned to Curtis Jones, about to be 21-year-old lad, and he has shone for me this month. And if he can just keep it going if he disappears out the side for a week or two and comes back in, I now know that Curtis Jones can come in and do it, and particularly on that left side of midfield. Somebody needs to grab that, because Thiago's not going to play 50 games a season in that position.
Do you know what's interesting about Jones? I'm a big fan of his, and amongst friends, I would always back him all the time. And anyone says, oh, we need him, I say, well, Curtis Jones is 20 years. He's going to be a fantastic... He's already good enough to play for Villa, play for all of those mid-table teams, Leicester. That's where he's at now, which means that his ceiling's a lot higher. So he is good enough to play for Liverpool Football Club. What he did in the autumn when he came into the side and had a big impact and then had that crazy injury, which then followed up by COVID, you can't do anything about that. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. But for me, I'm in a position where Curtis Jones comes into our team. We talk about Manchester City squad, and we talk about how they can interchange players, whether it be from position to position or from the bench to the starting 11, without any drop-off. Curtis Jones is fine to that. Curtis Jones comes into our team. He's different to Thiago. He does things that Thiago can't do, but the quality of the side doesn't particularly drop off. Mm-hmm. The difference with Ox is, I think Ox is, I love Ox and I would keep him, and I think he's got a position in the squad. He can play multiple positions. But what you do is you can put Ox in if you change in one player. So if Henderson's not there, you can play Ox. If Salah's not there, you might be able to play Ox. But when you play Ox amongst a hugely different team, you notice that he's not in his preferred role or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whereas
better being like the 9th, 10th or 11th in an otherwise first choice.
Yeah, so which is great, by the way.
Yeah.
But systematically, He will always play that role. I can never see him, even if he signs a new deal, ever in this squad being a systematic starter. Like, you are going to be that guy. He's just slightly different. Whereas with Curtis Jones, I disagree. I think he's got all the tools at his age to be. He can retain his position now, and Thiago can work his way back in, and no one will say anything.
My only slight point on that, because it was what I was thinking when we were talking about Ox, is I think he's I think we thought Jordan Henderson's just taken that position off him forever now. Mm. But I think the form that Henderson's been in another world, if Thiago had been fit, or maybe we'd had another midfield option, it wouldn't have shocked me to see Ox start one of them games in midfield ahead of... that's how Rigi's fit. He actually gives you more the option because you've got another guy for the... You don't need Ox for the forward line. I don't think... I agree in so much as I don't think Ox is going to be... He's going to start 50 games. You know, he's not going to start the games that we would definitely start Jordan Henderson if he was fit and available for. But he might be closer to it, which is not actually disagreeing with you. It's just like,
yeah,
but I really like him. I really like him. He's I was concerned in the summer as well that we'd got everything we were going to get out of him. But if you told me we're signing him down for another 3 or 4 years, I'd have no problem with that. Because
I've only got one thing with him. Sorry to cut you off. It's just purely my reasoning behind this, to allow you to carry on a second, is that it's just that I'll never see him becoming defensively... Be able to see the way at the weekend, Hendo didn't have a great game second half with the ball. None of them did. It was difficult and we were tired. But defensively, he was brilliant, as was Fabinho and Jones. In that second, we were defensively sound. That's where I feel like I'll never see that from Ox, be defensively. Just it's different. He's just an attacking player.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's why I always think he'll be that extra guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you too. I think it is so hard to be Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain in that Liverpool squad, because it would be hard to get into rhythm anyways because of these players we have in front of him, no matter in which position, if he plays right wing or if he plays in the midfield. But on top of that, he had all that injuries and all that stuff. And I remember the time, 2018 around, he played the quarterfinals against City, then the one against Roma at home until he got injured. Mm. He was a standout player in that time. Like, he scored, he drove through the midfield, and that was when Ox were at his best. And it's not necessary to ask the what if questions, but what would happen if he never gets injured?
Yeah.
Like, would we ever have made moves up down there? Could it have been different?
Yeah.
So I love our midfield options. Even if Hendo is not there, he's still the captain. Having Fabinho, Hendo, and then Keita, Thiago, Jones, Ox, that's also a blessing too, but also a curse for a guy like Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Yeah.
And like I said it when I sat here with Chris and your dad, and like, Ox needs rhythm. Yeah. I've never seen a player who needs more rhythm than Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, because when he gets 5 games, 10 games on a bounce with significant playing time, I really like him.
The beauty of it, of course, we're going to be playing 2 games a week for the rest of the season now. So there's going to be plenty of games. I just got a stats up from...
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
1920. 43 appearances in all comps for Liverpool, the title-winning season, which you get overlooked a lot. But what's fascinating, the Transfermarkt have got like the layout of positions he played. 25 centre mid, 8 left mid, 5 right mid, left winger 2, right winger 1, attacker mid 1. You know, and that's, for me, is Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. He is Milner, but in the 6 offensive positions, effectively. And he's like he's 28, so he's only 28 this year, so he won't be 29 till next season. He's definitely got a few more years on him. Will he keep the pace? Probably, at least for a few of them. He's homegrown. He's got a lot of things going for him. I agree. I live to be proven wrong on these things. I know we don't live in that world anymore where people like to die on hills just because it was a point they made. They become so attached to point. It's like it's special to them that they made a point. I want Oxlade-Chamberlain. I'm desperate for him to prove me wrong because it means Liverpool have got a brilliant and even better footballer. And what I'm saying is I'd be made up if he just goes back to 1920 Ox. Or I don't want that. I don't need him to be that one who was scoring goals against Man City, back in 17-18, and he was a transformative player for our midfield. I'd be more than happy for him to just go back to being our 12th man. Mm-hmm. And he's the guy who comes in any situation and there's zero drop-off. He's got a massive character, massive personality. He's really important around the dressing room and the changes and the training ground and all that kind of stuff. And he finally started to add goals again this season, which has been a thing that's been missing. 3 goals in the last 2 months. I think massive goals as well. Scores the opener against Leicester, like the turnaround goal, isn't it, in the League Cup quarter final. And then he scores, obviously, gets a goal against Brentford, and
header,
then he scores
at the back post,
and then he scores the goal of the weekend. So no, very, very important.
Do you know with Oxlade, from what I'm told, from a friend of a friend, from his side, there's no intent to leave this summer. And I think with him being homegrown, I think he's, because of his contract situation, I think the likelihood is he'll run it down and leave, or he'll sign a new one. That's what I'm told. So I don't think, when people will be going, sell him in the summer, I actually think that's not going to happen from his side more than anything. Mm-hmm. But the one thing is, we've been talking about it, and like you said, he's the Milner for those front six. That's a fantastic analogy. What I would say about him, where he's going to struggle in the long term for Liverpool, is that what Liverpool are doing now is they're breeding the likes of Elliott and Jones, and you'll see it with Morton. They're breeding the defensive side of the game into their development. Yeah. So when they come into the first team, like we saw with Elliott, where did that come from? We saw him as a forward player, but it's not. He's been bred into him now, the defensive side of the game, so he can just run at that rate.
Yeah.
Whereas because he's coming in as an already mature player, it's very difficult to align all of his football brain.
Yeah.
So I think as Elliott and Jones progress, they'll always have that sort of pragmatic.
Yes, absolutely.
Needed.
Well, this is the thing. Your next generation should usurp the old one. That's the point. That's how you're meant to. That's how you maintain your squad. That's how you stay on top. And you're right. You know, Ox might find himself in 2 years' time unable to even be what we're talking about there, and that's the point where he might think, okay, it's time for me to move on. But in that point, he'll be 30 and there'll be no shortage of takers, and hopefully his body will still be in decent nick. I know Lallana's struggled a little bit for fitness since he's left, but that's an interesting thing. Ox in 2 years' time could still go and play for the vast majority of the Premier League teams.
That's a question. Will it be, if he leaves, will it be an Adam Lallana type of transfer or a genie one? Like the one where Genie, somehow I think that he regrets it because he doesn't seem happy at all at Paris. So which way could it go? I think, like, would I put him in the starting 11 in the majority of the other clubs in the Premier League? Maybe. I think so.
A good 13, 14, wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. I mean, even Spurs now, they're dying for someone like him who just goes with the ball. Yeah. Maybe not Chelsea, but, you know.
Yeah, but then... Yeah,
fair, Leicester.
Fair play. But the point is, we say this all along, if he's good enough to be Liverpool, if he's good enough for the role in Liverpool's squad, he's more than good enough to be that in City squad or Man City squad. We forget sometimes. I think sometimes we put these other sides up on a pedestal, mainly because their names are a bit more exotic to us because they're newer signings or they've come from other leagues, or we've used them on, you know, we brought them as signings on other games. No, none of us has actively gone out and bought Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain on a Footy Manager game, unless you maybe, I mean, I've literally got him in League One on my one on Footy Manager at the moment in my
2020
AC Mitchin, homegrown made up football.
football team game, but that's the kind of point, isn't it? He is good, and he's very impressive. And I think that's what we're getting is a tune out of the lads, the senior footballers who are on the fringe, but also the real encouragement is Curtis Jones for me, because they're about to be 21.
I think he's great, mate. Yeah, I think he's fantastic. Think he's
no terrific. Words.
Super chat question here from Deegan Shaw. It was 179. Thank you so much, mate. He says, how does Naby fit back in, guys? And that's the thing that we forget sometimes, because we're now all bought in on this little squad that we've got and how well they're doing. He'll be back even sooner, because obviously Guinea are out of the AFCON now, so he could even be back for the Cardiff game.
Definitely, yeah. He didn't play.
No.
He was suspended, really.
Yeah, so he should be.
In the two previous ones, he was man of the match.
I mean,
so.
He does literally get injured every time he goes on a plane. There's something about altitude that doesn't suit Naby Keita, honestly. Like, yeah, he sits uncomfortably or something. I reckon he lies across the seats and, you know, you've got the bumps or something in it.
Maybe doesn't wear them socks, mate. That's what it is.
Yeah,
them
compression socks. Yeah.
Get them on, Nab.
Deep-vein thrombosis, that's the problem. I suppose the answer to this, Evo, is he fits back into the squad, and that's the point now, is that we just be nice just to have a couple of months where we've got a really strong bench and options to change games.
And we really need this. Like, there will be games. Like, no, there are games. We need to win every game. If we really want to change for any silverware, we need to win every game, and in order to do this, you have to have a full squad and a really well-balanced squad. And I think, that is a luxury problem to have all these midfielders. But hey, come on, we had all these problems with injuries a lot of years now. Yeah. So having them all fit and in form, we will only capitalize of this. And I mean,
if we want to fight on multiple fronts, which we're going to have to, because we're already in a League Cup final. Mm. So that's like one, that's another extra game. That's like three extra games we've had to play. We're two for this month and one extra one next month. And the Champions League is back next month as well. Mm. So and the FA Cup's back next month. So we're literally playing in four competitions.
And that's about Liverpool. So there's no iron team.
Yeah.
Like that is not the phase where you go out and say, I need to play. Like, I demand to play. Like, We should be happy to have so many options, and you said it, like, we will play.
And they will play. That's the thing.
We will have two games a week till May. So having all of them will be vital.
Yeah, absolutely. Andy App sent a £5 super chat in as well. Thank you. Andy says, imagine if we can take City to the final day, beat Wolves, and then let Stevie's Villa finish things off. What a finale that would be. We will talk about the possibilities of that. We're going to get City's fixtures up in February, and we're going to talk through them. And we'll see how far we get with that, but obviously Liverpool play them on like the 9th of April, and we'll have a little bit of a deep fantasise about that. But we will return for that after this short break.
Sorry for interrupting your show, but we have our incredible streaming service, Redmen Plus, and we are so proud of the content that we produce. If you like the stuff that we put out for free, please show your support. Join Redmen Plus and get every single episode that we produce directly into your ears in your native podcast app. Just go over to theredmentv.com, sign up, and enjoy even more Redmen content.
Hey, we're back. Right, Sadio, we were having a little carry on of that chat about the City stuff. Great comment before the break there from Andy. We want to have a little look at what February looks like for Manchester City. It's on paper, it's not great. You know, in terms of getting our optimism together for this one, you're talking, they've got Fulham in the FA Cup fourth round on Saturday the 5th. They host Brentford on the 9th. They've got Norwich on the 12th. They've got Sporting, Lisbon away. Then they've got they've got Tottenham at home. Then they've got Everton away. And then heading into March, they've got Man United. We might stretch this out a bit further in a minute. But on paper, Evo, that looks like the easiest month of football for Man City ever. However...
Yeah, like we thought the same about the game on the weekend.
Yes.
And you will get caught up if you underestimate them.
Yes.
And like to have like Brentford, Norwich, I don't know about these teams, but just the stretch, because like we know that the Champions League is important for City. Like, they playing in Sporting, hosting Tottenham, and then playing Everton. No, we don't know what will.
Nobody knows. We'll presume Everton will be shite, but you know, yeah. you never know.
That's a week where they could lose points, and I don't see City going on a losing streak. That is not what we need. Drop 1 point, 2 points here, drop 3 points there, and we get closer until we play them in April.
Yeah.
That is the most important. So it's so interesting to see how they will react on this game with that break, because like they go into this little break with a kind of a bad feeling, I would say. Mm. Like, yeah. Going 1-1, or are they so mature to say, like,
there's no way that at least one member of that Manchester City squad didn't watch Liverpool's game at the weekend.
True. More than did, definitely.
Yeah, and didn't feel a little bit like, oh, you know, because we've got, God knows how many times I know we've watched them and gone, oh, wouldn't it be nice if they, oh, well, you know, like, keep an eye on them playing Chelsea and then they just walk away.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on their supposed difficult games and thinking that it's going to be okay as a result of it. So, yeah, I think you're spot on. I think on paper, that run where they've got Sporting Lisbon away from home, so they'll travel to Lisbon, then they've got to come back and host Tottenham. Then
not
they've got
easy.
To go no, and then they've got to go to Goodison Park, and then they go to then they've got to host Man United, and then they've got the second leg of the Champions League. That could prove to be decisive. My sneaky feeling on this though, Sam, is I'm more confident about them getting wins over Tottenham and Everton and United. It's Brentford and Norwich, and this sounds insane, by the way, but they're two teams, and maybe Everton might throw into this mix as well, actually, who I hope Brentford are in a decent shape by that point. I hope they've got a little bit in the legs, because they gave us a hell of a game earlier on in the season. They actually gave us a difficult game in the first half at Anfield as well, but I think they ran out of steam in there. I hope they've just got enough in the tank, because they're the type of team, and Norwich are too, who will go and have a swing like Southampton did.
Yeah.
I don't think either of them will be like, oh, well, never mind, the 3 points are lost. I'm looking at teams and going, there's no great tactical masterclass other than we're just going to throw bodies at Man City and hope that something breaks.
Interestingly, though, I look at that, the fact that their next two games are very, very winnable, as a positive, because what if we're going to chase Man City down? I don't want them playing third last penultimate game of the season or whatever, Norwich away. I don't want them playing a team that's down.
Yeah.
I don't want them playing Brentford at home, who they should just be able to absolutely strangle. I'd rather them play them now.
Mm-hmm.
Our mantra was get out of January as is. We've gone out of January in a better position. Suddenly it looks like, barring anything that happens at AFCON, everything's going to fall into place for the next game in terms of injuries, players coming back, squad size, etc., etc. Obviously, like I say, Salah and Mane, it's slightly different, but everybody else is there. So I'd rather them have a couple of easy games now, and then when it starts getting difficult with Champions, then they've got to play Everton to any spaces. Also, the Premier League, as proven on Saturday, is a little bit like the boxing sort of scene at the moment. Its styles make fights. Man City could play Chelsea now. It seems like they've fixed what happened last year, and they can just beat them every time. They just got their number. Spurs could play Chelsea, as proven. They played them four times this year, haven't scored a goal, and they just keep losing. But then Spurs will play somebody else. Who it's just it styles.
Spurs are also
fight.
The kind of team that have got a good record against Man City.
Southampton played them in the autumn and drew 0-0 and had a stonewall penalty overturned and a red card. I don't know how, but you know it is what it is with VAR. And then they've done the same thing. They should have won it at the post, you know, off that set piece. They should have won it at the weekend. So therefore, it's certain teams seem to get the worst out of them. So I actually look at that and think Everton away is never easy for anybody, and unless you're Liverpool this season. And and Spurs at home has been a tricky game for them in the past. So I kind of almost feel the opposite, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, no, I think it's fair. There's also, I just had a quick check, there's also a potential fifth round FA Cup tie between Everton, the Everton game and the United game. Now, they if they draw a big team in that, that's all of a sudden another Champions League week where you've got, because it's a midweek, the fifth round of the FA Cup. It's the Wednesday it's scheduled for. So like that, you could end up with, yeah, like a big game at the weekend, big game midweek, big game at the end of, the weekend.
And we know they have to value the Champions League. That is a talking point about this team, like in Germany, where I'm from over here. Like, of course, it's a suspenseful title race somehow coming up, maybe. Yeah. But when February, mid of February comes around, the Champions League is important to them. And going to Portugal, going to Sporting, that won't be easy. And then going back and hosting Tottenham. Like, when you go deep into it, it's not that easy as it seems.
And the thing is, City have got... I'm just going to caveat all this, but City are more than capable of winning every game of football to now into the season. Like, you know, yeah, so yeah. We are doing a flight of fancy, and we are taking the positive slant on all of this. But I don't see any reason why not to, because I think to your point, and just to go further down their fixtures, you know, when you get to the second leg of the Champions League game after Manchester United, they go to Selhurst Park. Which again, Crystal Palace, you know, if Crystal Palace do to us what they did, you do to them what they did to us, there's every chance they get something from that game. They then host Brighton. Brighton are exactly that, another team who will do the same. Ball, yeah. Exactly. Burnley, they will fuck everywhere. without a shadow of a doubt. Then they play us. And then after that, the run to the end of the season is Wolves away, Watford at home, no one knows. I mean, Roy Hodgson's relegation escaping Watford, which will be that by then. Leeds away, Newcastle at home, West Ham away, and Villa at home for the
West
final
Ham
game
away.
Of the season.
Top four. This is what I mean. I like mentally, right? If you're City now, you know Pep's like Pep's edgy, right? Yeah. He is. And we've seen the footage of that. Was it All or Nothing? I can't remember what it's called. Where he's in there going, is Salah going to play?
Yeah.
But everyone listening, he's scratching his face. Is Salah going to play up front? And what happens? He absolutely messes it up and he lose 3-0. The tie's over. Yeah. Like, he was sweating on that touchline. Because he knew Southampton are a horrible team to play.
Yeah.
And he'll know now. We're theoretically, because we will beat Leeds, I'm sorry, but we will. We're theoretically... 6 points, all things being equal, behind them. And they know they've got to play us. And they know what happened when we were 7 points ahead of them and we played them. And then we went on a mad run of winning 17, but they won 19 or something. You know, it was crazy that season when we both got 98 and 97 points. Mentally, Pep knows every team sheet he looks at from now on is going to see Mohamed Salah and Sadio Mane in the squad at least. Mm-hmm. and we're closer to them. So he knows. Yeah. He saw what Salah could do to him, never mind everybody else.
I think Liverpool's plan this season was to burn everyone off. And that's why we've played the type of football we've played. I think we were looking to blow the league away by Christmas and then see where and try and squeak our way through January and the league and hopefully have a bit of a lead because we've come out and attacked like we've never attacked before. Mm-hmm. Or certainly haven't attacked since like 17-18.
Yeah.
But obviously slightly more sternly defensively, but not unfortunately sternly enough because we've just dropped too many points and City have done exactly the same thing. They've matched us step for step. It reminds me a bit of 15-16, when we didn't have Europe. And the first like 3 months of the season, it's us and Chelsea who were like one and two in the league, and Chelsea have just got more quality. And when it gets to January, our season completely falls apart. And it's I wonder whether like it feels a bit like now where we got to that point and we were like, oh well, shit, that hasn't worked, and Pep's probably going, now's the time for us to put our foot to the floor, and they've done it, and all of a sudden, the psychological damage of their gap actually at one point being whatever it was, people will be able to tell me. I keep guessing at the number. It was 15 points at one point because they played earlier in one weekend. At one point, we went into a game like 14 or 15 points behind Man City this month. And all of a sudden, they've come to the end of this period and the gap's now 9.
With a game in hand,
You know, and whether it goes, crap. There's just every chance this is just going to be it's going to be 18-19 all over again where we're down to the final two or three games of the season and it's who blinks first.
We chase so much better.
I think so.
Yeah. We chased Barcelona. We chased Bayern Munich when we were 0-0 away. We chase so much better when we've got something that we've got to go and do. Because you've got nothing to lose. And that's what Liverpool is as a city and as a football team. When we're ahead and we're suddenly on this pedestal, things get tricky. I mean, we should have got 108 points or something that season, and we were, oh, what do we do now? We've won, oh, let's get pissed. And then, like,
I was so annoyed. I had an argument with a City fan this week, and it was like, what, is there a Liverpool? Has there ever been a Liverpool team that's better than their Centurions team? And I was like, yeah, it's probably the team that we win the league with, or the team that, that when they get 98 yeah. points, because. But you'll never prove it, because if we just beaten Everton when we come back from lockdown,
or Burnley at all,
yeah, exactly, we'd have ended up on 101 points or whatever like that. You know what I mean? And oh yeah, annoying. Just looking at Liverpool's fixtures, it's not favourable. City's definitely look better, and it's because of there's just a couple of headline names in there. Obviously Cardiff, much of a muchness there, you know, obviously Championship team regardless. Although I think Fulham are a tougher draw than Cardiff.
It is, yeah, they're in the relegation battle, Cardiff.
Yeah. Leicester at home, but I'm looking forward to that one because I think we've got a massive point to prove against them. Burnley away is fine. It should be okay. I think we've got Burnley's number, and I don't think they're not going to be a stronger outfit. Having Inter Milan as our Champions League game is obviously that's a much bigger game of football. Yeah. We have got Norwich at home. Good. We've got the EFL Cup final to contend with, of course, there. Yeah. We've got West Ham at home again.
That's probably not going to happen because we've got Cardiff at home, so that's when the FA Cup game falls. So they're going to have to come to Anfield on a Wednesday night.
Yes.
So I don't think that fixture happens then.
Oh, the West Ham.
And they've got Europe, so when they do come to us, they're going to be like, oh, be arsed with this.
That's a good point. That's interesting. Then we've got Inter Milan, the second leg of that one. Brighton away is going to be a tricky one. United coming to Anfield in March. I'm dying for that one because that could be brilliant. Watford coming to us is a good one, although, again, they had a good time a couple of years ago. Then we play. That's then when we play Manchester City, and of course there'll be other games to be dropped in here. There'll be more FA Cups potentially, and the next round of the Champions League will go in there somewhere as well if we progress through that.
Because we're in the League Cup final, though, Paul, it's going to be difficult because we're going to end up in a position where either we're a little bit like City, where in the 18-19 season, where we could end up going sort of like 9 points behind with three games in hand. Now that worked out well for them because they just won every match, but. Points on the board could come into play if we have to play West Ham, Leeds, and another game because of the Arsenal. Mm-hmm. So we're going to end up with probably at least three games to catch up on.
Yes,
that starts getting tasty when you're getting those back end.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Just to quickly run through it, then obviously after City there's then Villa, the Merseyside derby. That's mad because again, I'll check the dates out in a second.
The run City, after City,
Villa, Everton, in fact, United. Watford, I mean, it's just, here's the thing.
I like everything.
It's a twat of a run-in for Liverpool. However, you've got to play everyone and you've got to beat everyone if you want to do it. It'd be an uphill battle, but like the satisfaction of managing to get across the line. Having Southampton and Wolves as our final two games of the season, I'd be made up with that because there'll be two teams who will have nothing to play for by that part of the year, potentially.
Probably.
Potentially.
I agree.
Should have done this before we did City's fixtures.
No, you're right. They're mid-table. They are. They're just not going to be anywhere else. Holiday. And they're allowed to go on holiday this year, so they'll definitely be on holiday.
but that will be a challenge. I like everything everyone we play before Man City. I like this whole stretch more than the three-game stretch with City. Like City, yeah. Villa, Everton.
Yeah.
That won't be easy.
Everton's 3 points in Anfield, mate.
Yeah, true, but... Hopefully.
Under Rooney and Ferguson.
Yeah. I mean, I think at that point of the season, it's all about narratives. And I think I will much rather go to February the same way we went through January and then get even more better in the last 2 months where it's really important to play your best football because you also play Champions League football, FA Cup football. So I think... What is like in order to win the league, you need consistency, and what is consistency build off? Like I think there are 3 points. I would say it's a well balanced squad, luck with injuries,
yeah,
and favorable self earned narratives.
Yeah.
So getting through this and winning everything or losing really not a lot of points will help us because We are at such a pivotal point of the season where the narratives could change. Mm-hmm. Like Man City, like the two big clubs in the Premier League are Man City and Liverpool. Man City is the one who won everything. They were unbeatable and invincible until this point against Southampton. They lost something, but they were that good in the last 15, 20 games. And Liverpool was the other one. They were really good, but they were beatable at some point.
We've had problems galore. We had problems.
I would love to exchange to trade these narratives at these points,
yep,
because it could be really well the case that Man City wins everything, yep, from now on. That could be absolutely possible. But I also see a point in this season around, we don't know how they will maybe catch COVID.
Yeah.
They didn't have that. And
Typically, and this is why I felt it was all going their way, was they had their outbreak where the semi-finals were scheduled to be played at the
League Cup. But did you see who played when they had the outbreak? There was two players missing. It was all staff.
Yeah.
They've got that many, haven't they?
Yeah, like the one they put against in the league.
Because all the kids had it, probably.
They had still really...
Yeah.
There was a bloody joke, like telling, oh, COVID and players are out. They had Gundogan in. They had...
To your point, it's possible, existing possibility that a lot of the bad luck that's befallen Liverpool and caused us to stumble and trip in December could well be visited upon Man City, because we know they had it when we won the league, when they were talking about they were really unlucky with their centre-back issue. They might find that. But again, if it doesn't happen, it's just going to be a straight old slog.
It'll be a battle, yeah.
Season. I'm fine. I'm well up for that. I just want us to be in touching distance. And as I said all along, my hope for this season is that we're going to see a flip reverse of 18-19.
Yeah.
It wouldn't shock me if they went on and won the Champions League, but I just feel like that thing of them having the lead that isn't quite as big as everyone, it was a bit of a false gap that they had. If Liverpool can just chip away at that point of the sweat, I think that Pep Guardiola, he's not, but you're right, he's prime. When Pep's head goes, City's heads go. Yeah. And again, and you see it on the pitch, when Pep goes, the team go. When De Bruyne goes, the team go. And if you can just start to psychologically, it's just that thing of nothing scarier than the sound that you're running along and the sound of footsteps pounding up behind you. Like, you know, you can be the greatest runner on earth. Like Mo Farah, absolutely perfect. But if you put someone chasing you and breathing heavily and recklessly down your neck while you're doing that, I'm sorry, but his well-practiced stride, he's not going to necessarily break the world records in terms of speed. He's just as likely to trip over his own legs in fear as he is to go and smash it.
I completely agree. I just think, you know, there's only one team who can win the quadruple this year. Remember that, guys? Well, Chelsea theoretically, but they're so far behind. I mean, we've just got to use it and Just be what we are. If we win that first trophy, you know the first domestic cup, I think there's no reason why not. I think we're very well primed now to put something on them. I'm intrigued to see how City react, because bear in mind, you've just said then they've just had this ridiculous run, and then they still stop on the run and go, "Where are you? Oh, you're still there."
That could be the mistake.
Like, they're still there.
If you look at this, I think, if it goes down to the last couple of games, I really much our last two more than them's. Because when they play West Ham and Aston Villa, like in 18-19 they played Brighton on the last day, and we went ballistic when Brighton got the lead, and then they just finished them off.
Steven Gerrard will have, if it's still within, whether it's within the realms of possibility for Liverpool or not, Gerrard will have his side kicking seven shades of shite on City that day.
He will be
doing everything in their power to upset it, because the idea of, because they're the ones who sing he slipped on his fucking arse and all that kind of stuff. Like, there'll be something to, Kevin De Bruyne falls over and Danny Ings strides in and slots and scores the goal for Villa.
You're missing the moment of 13-14, Paul. Yeah. The moment we all thought it was won. Coutinho!
If I was Gerrard and he causes Liverpool to win the league with a win with Aston Villa last game of the season, I would run the full length of the pitch and slide on my arse. Yeah. Slide on my arse. Yeah, Gerrard should just do it. Slip, do it, mate. Just do it for the laughs. He would now, because you see him, he's still like the Everton singing like the baby's not yours song still. You know what I mean? Like that's an acceptable thing to sing to a human being, and him doing like the sucking the thumb thing, yeah, in response to it and all that kind of stuff. I want it for us, I want it for Gerrard.
And I think like when you look at for us, it's not an easy situation to chase them all the time, but we are somehow good in it. It will be difficult for the last months. It won't be easy for City too, because like, how do we hurt them the most with consistency? Because when we win, that pressures them, that puts an enormous stress on them. That's not easy to take.
And just again, in terms of the hope springs eternal, Tottenham took points off City. Tottenham beat City first game of the season. Tottenham were third. Absolutely tears. You know, no one remembers that, of course, like, because now they got Conte and they're turning the corner and blah blah blah. But they had a rubbish manager and they had a rubbish team, and they had Harry Kane. They had no Harry Kane. They've drawn twice with Southampton now. So Southampton have stolen 4 points off their title race for them, which is absolutely sound.
Palace beat them at home.
Palace beat them. And if that of all of those things are possible, then anything's possible. Is what I go with. Liverpool's mission. Sorry, before we wrap up, Ebo, this month, and we've done this now, and I'm sure we've got a couple of weeks to continue to kind of have this debate and dream and live in flight to fancy. It's like a mini pre-season. This, we need to switch off to this after this. Yeah. When the footy comes back, switch off to City for a bit. If they drop points, amazing. But like, let's just get back to supporting Liverpool. Let's go get back to getting behind this team, because if the team that's just done this month is capable of that. Then if we can get a couple more of our best lads in, we're capable of having one and another historically wonderful season. So why the hell not? Right, thank you so much for joining us for the podcast this week. Thank you so much to Sam and to Evo. Follow both of those guys on social media if you would care to do just that. Do check out Redmen Plus as well. We've got loads of Boss shows. So if you need more Liverpool content to keep you occupied during the international break, and my God, you will. Because let's be honest, international breaks are rubbish. We've got loads of documentaries, features, interviews. It's like a little version of Netflix for Liverpool fans over on Redmen Plus. Go to theredmentv.com, sign up. And if you join us, Club Legend, not only could you potentially get yourself on that Club Legend show, we've also got a signed Jordan Henderson print, which we're giving away. There's only 25 of them in the world, and you could be winning one of them. Yes, thank you so much. That was lovely. I feel well more upbeat about everything now. I hope you do too at home. I'm back with another Redmen podcast next week.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.